The storytelling portion of the service here, I'd like to set up a little bit of context for why the youth group thought it was a good idea to go to southern Louisiana mid-July, where the heat index was regularly between 105 and 110. On August 27th in 2020, Hurricane Laura made landfall in Cameron Parish as a Category 4 hurricane with sustained winds of 150 miles an hour, and it created $19 billion worth of damage. This hurricane also killed 31 people in Haiti, another four in the Dominican Republic, and then continued to take the lives of 42 people once it made landfall in the U.S. Calcasieu Parish to the north had a mandatory evacuation for approximately 200,000 people. I remember meeting one individual who had evacuated to Alexandria, Louisiana, which is a three-hour drive to the north. While he was in Alexandria evacuating from the hurricane, the house where he was staying had its roof ripped off. And so that's when he knew it was bad. 6 weeks later, Hurricane Delta made landfall as a Category 2 in the town of Creole, which is actually the same town where our group went swimming on our last day in Louisiana. Later, in February of 2021, there was a 10-day period where temperatures dipped below freezing. Current and previous building codes across Louisiana did not plan for freezing weather. Nationwide, there was an estimated $20.8 billion worth of damages and a national death toll of 172 due to loss of power. This is the costliest winter storm event on record in the U.S. Then again, in May of 2021, Southwest Louisiana got hit by 17 inches of rain in about 3 to 5 hours. So the need there was huge, and from multiple storms. And that just got it again and again. So MDS was invited to help in Southwest Louisiana, actually from a partner that we had worked with for our responses from Hurricane Ike and Rita. And we built houses and repaired homes from 2007 to 2012 in that area. We found a partner church in Jennings, Louisiana, where we set up a camp to do cleanup, tarping roofs, and minor repairs. As the work has progressed, we've transitioned to doing more involved repair jobs, and we're actually building one new home. And our current partners are Catholic Charities, the Louisiana United Methodist Conference, the Community Foundation of Southwest Louisiana, Southwest Louisiana Responds, and the Fuller Center for Disaster Rebuilders. As organizations, we all have different strengths, whether it's funding, case management, or construction in the instance of MDS. Within MDS, we have groups and individuals serving all the way from Idaho to New York, Alaska to Florida, and everything in between. But in addition to being from different geographic locations, those who serve come from different theological perspectives. We have people serving from the Conservative Mennonite Conference, the Groffdale Conference, the Amish, the Ivana Network, MCUSA, Catholics, and many, many more, and even individuals without a faith background. And often these individuals are serving together at the same time, so MDS really becomes a melting pot very quickly. We'll now hear a few stories of what we did, our personal reflections as we encountered a culture, a way of life, and stories of persistence and resilience from a people whose life, prosperity, and desperation all come from water, which can be as destructive as it can be life-giving.
Hi, my name is Leah Hostetler, and I'm going to start with a little overview of our trip and our time in Louisiana to give you some context for our stories. We left early in the morning, Saturday the 9th. Midway through the first day of travel, we got the news that the MDS leadership volunteers in Jennings, where we were headed, had been exposed to COVID the previous week. After some consultation with the volunteers and parents, we decided to continue with the trip and just take additional precautions. On the way there, we stopped briefly in New Orleans for beignets at Café du Monde at the New Orleans City Park, surrounded by live oaks, white ibises, and jazz. Then, an hour outside of New Orleans, we stopped at Whitney Plantation. Whitney is the only educational plantation in Louisiana that tells the story of plantation life from the perspective of the enslaved people who lived and worked there. Whitney Plantation had been a sugarcane plantation, which apparently was even more brutal than cotton plantations farther north. The average life expectancy for a slave on sugarcane plantation was only 7 years. It was particularly exhausting because not only did they harvest the sugarcane, they processed it as well, boiling down the cane juice into sugar. The sugar season ended in January, which should have been a relief, but was often a time of heartbreak. If the plantation hadn't made enough money, then slaves would be sold. Families and friends broken up to serve the economic needs of the enslavers. While we learned a lot about the distant history of the plantation, one of the most shocking things for many of us was that African Americans were still living and working on the plantation into the 1970s, kept there by systematic racism. Instead of sharecropping, these were poorly paid wage laborers who'd be kept in bondage by debts to the plantation store and Jim Crow laws that didn't allow African Americans to travel freely. The guide told a story of a man who recently returned to Whitney Plantation who had lived in mostly unmodernized 18th century slave cabins during the 1960s. The Whitney Plantation gave us an important perspective on the racial dynamics that we saw throughout the rest of our time in southern Louisiana. After Whitney Plantation, we made the rest of the trip to Jennings. I think everyone's first impression of Jennings was that it was incredibly hot and humid. With a little time there, it became apparent that Jennings was a small town with some noticeable contradictions. They had a nice tennis court and right across the street, rundown housing. The north side of town had nice restaurants, a Walmart, nice housing, and was much whiter. The old downtown and south side of town was a different story. The downtown was run down, the old grain silos were empty, and many businesses had been abandoned. The housing was relatively small and varied greatly from falling down with tarps on the roofs to well cared for with fresh paint and nicely kept yards. But the community was overwhelmingly African American. We worked in several different towns, but the patterns were similar. The conditions for the people whose houses we were working on was pretty stark. In one house, they hadn't had running water or a toilet for over 2 years. In another, a grandmother and her four grandchildren were living in an RV trailer waiting for a new house. There were multiple houses without roofs or with roof damage, and you could smell mold and mildew. MDS in Jennings is based out of a gym at the Jennings Church of Christ. Four bunk rooms have been created along one side with a dining area and lounge area on the other side. Our daily schedule was to get up around 6 a.m. with time to pack sack lunches before breakfast at 7. After breakfast, we had a morning devotion and then split into four teams to go out to do our respective sites. The range of things we did included building porches and stairs, moving the wall of an HVAC room, painting, doing some basic demolition, putting up siding, digging some very muddy holes for footings, installing, among other things, ceiling tile, a hot water heater, a new toilet, many electrical outlets and window trim. But whatever we were doing, it was extremely hot and humid. MDS had a fridge stocked with Gatorade and a large cooler with water, and we downed gallons of both on a daily basis. Between 4 o'clock and 5, we returned, and there was a mad dash for the showers, and then dinner at 6. The members of the church that was hosting us brought a never-ending stream of desserts. We had more than 5 dessert options a night. And Cajun delicacies on top of the meals provided by the MDS cooks. We got to try Bodan sausage, made with pork and rice, and the pastor's wife made us an enormous pot of gumbo for supper Wednesday evening. A couple of days we had guests during meal teams, including Miss Cynthia, a social worker from Catholic Relief Services, and a team from FEMA. After supper, we would review what we did for the day, clean up the dining area, and then we would have a few hours of time before lights out at 10 o'clock. The work was exhausting and occasionally dangerous. We only had 2 relatively brief hospital visits, but a lot of progress was made. It was fulfilling to see some concrete changes to the houses that we worked on, even if most of the projects weren't finished at the end of the week. Friday afternoon, we ended early and went to the beach about an hour south of Jennings. We saw our first alligators of the trip and some homes that had been even more devastated than the ones we were working on. There were houses on tall stilts that had been almost completely destroyed by the 17-foot storm surge that had come on shore during Hurricane Laura. That said, the time on the beach was refreshing after a week of work. The water was warm but cooler than the air. There was a steady breeze coming off the Gulf, and the beach was great for shell collecting. The next morning, we headed towards home by the way of Lafayette, where we stopped for a swamp tour on Lake Martin. The first remarkable thing about the Cypress swamps is that there is so much slow and standing water, but there were no mosquitoes. The sweet gum trees in the swamp leach tannins into the water that act like citronella. The wildlife was also amazing. We saw a wide variety of herons and alligators of various sizes, including one named Stella, who was guarding her nest of eggs. The trip home was more eventful than we would have liked, with several accidents and delays, but we finally got back to Assembly last Sunday night. Now some of the MYFers and sponsors who came with us will share their individual experiences of the trip.
When we asked our students for reflections on our trip to Louisiana, two main themes rose to the surface. The first one was perspective. Whether within our own MYF group dynamics, the long-term volunteers working for Mennonite Disaster Service on site, the folks whose houses we were working on, the community of Jennings, Louisiana, and the broader South, and those living in the hurricane zone, the group was asked to consider alternative perspectives frequently. Some of these we achieved a bit more smoothly and graciously than others, and yet we found it a very consistent theme throughout the week. The second was pushing past our limits. Louisiana's hot. We've said that like 12 times already, I know. Much of the work we did was full body exhausting, not to mention the constant perspective shifting that was going on while navigating challenging individual circumstances and questions of our own identity. Oh, and the two ER visits. We didn't coordinate, so some of our stories overlap a little bit, sorry. On the last day, a few of us were trudging around in at least 3 inches of pure mud to build a set of porch stairs after a hard rain the previous day. I'm looking at you, Allie. That was us. It was the kind of mud that suctioned your shoes and made you lose your balance. And it was hot. And it was next to the sewer line. But we got in our posts and built a beautiful set of stairs, which you'll see some, well, you probably already saw pictures of those. Another group spent almost the entire week installing ceiling tiles. I don't know about you, but most of work involving ceilings give me neck and back pain just thinking about it. But this group persevered and leaned on each other to get through it, as a community should. I was so proud of them. And as I told our students, if service was always fun and enjoyable, everybody would be doing it. One story from me, and then I will be done talking to you all today. So on Thursday night, we had a visitor from the community join us for dinner. Cynthia Julian is the sole case manager for 5 counties in Louisiana dealing with disaster-caused home repair. She shared her story, living through her home being flooded with 2 feet of water 3 times within 9 months, repaired after each flood just to be flooded again. I've met many case managers and even was one for a time. Cynthia was unexpected. She reflected so much care for her clients, which, by the way, she has about 350 on her caseload alone. That's crazy. She identified that she knows what it's like to live through these disasters, and because she gets it, if she can help those who need it, then she's going to do the best she can to do that. I hold so much admiration for this woman, thinking about how someone who has worked for so many years, for as many years as she has, without burning out or becoming bitter, to help someone get money to re-roof their house only to have it flooded again 6 months later, or to make connections so someone can get a new bed because they lost theirs in the last flood and have just been doing without. I will hold on to these stories and more that she shared about her own experience and her clients while she held the tension of sadness and joy within their stories for quite a long time.
So I'm going to be sharing 2 stories from the MYF group. During my week, I did a lot of things I had never done or even thought I would do before. At Amy and I's first house, I was installing outlets and light switches for most of the day. I was installing them by hand, which meant I was trying to wrap really tough wires around little screws. While at times, certain outlets were frustrating to install, it was very rewarding to see the work I had done after. At the second house, I used tools I had never even touched, like a chop saw and jigsaw. I put on railing and built a set of stairs. It was tough work because we were working in the mud, heat, and humidity. But when we finished, I felt really proud of the work we had done all week. Okay, and the second. I went into the week not knowing exactly what I would be doing. I knew I would be working on a house, but there are so many things to work on in houses, and I didn't know which one it would be. I expected to be working on many different things throughout the week. On the first morning, I walked into the house, and the first task was installing ceiling tiles. Little did I know at this point that installing ceiling tiles was pretty much what I would be doing the whole week. The first day, I learned how to cut and place the tiles, which I actually enjoyed quite a lot. And then the second day, I learned how to install them on the ceiling. I enjoyed installing them, but in order to do it, I had to be in the back room, which was the hottest in the house, and the whole house was hot, so. And on top of that, I was right by the ceiling, and as we know, heat rises. So it was hot. After installing ceiling tiles for a long time in the heat, you get to a point where you feel like you can't do it anymore. Your back hurts, and you have moved the ladder a million times, and there's a bathtub in the way because you're in a bathroom, and you just want to stop. But you know you have a room to finish, so you keep going. And then when I finally finished the room, I looked at the ceiling, and it was beautiful and completely worth all the work. And especially knowing that the work I had put in would improve someone's house and quality of life was very rewarding.
So Leah told you that we had noticed that the leadership volunteers had been exposed to COVID on the way down, and they tested twice before we arrived, and both tests were negative. And then on Tuesday, they tested a final time, and the cook, the person who had actually been the most friendly and interactive with us, tested positive. And so we had to do some scrambling, and we kind of became shuffled and became interim cooks. So Amy and myself stayed up late, did breakfast for the next morning, stuff we could put in the oven. And then on, we got lucky that Wednesday, the church provided the meal for us in terms of gumbo. And then I kind of took over as cook on Thursday. And so that was the whole week was a lot of shuffling and being flexible and moving into positions that we didn't think we were going to move into. And I didn't expect myself to be cooking for the whole group. But it's something that I do as part of my job at Clubhouse, is cook for 16 to 20 people a day. So it was a fairly easy thing to move into. And thankfully, that was the last person to test positive for COVID of the whole group. And none of us got it from there. But I did get an offer from MDS to come down and cook for them whenever I wanted to.
Good morning. Earlier this summer, my parents talked to me about serving with the MDS. The idea of spending an entire week working in the hot sun and at the hands of an unfamiliar MDS leaders definitely was not the most appealing. However, when I heard some of my friends were able to come and Papa tagging along, that definitely did help. When the time came and we drove down to Louisiana, I stepped into the MDS building and was met with gendered systems. Gendered sleeping quarters, gendered restrooms, and the most disappointing, gendered crew groups. As a trans man, I continued to struggle with this throughout the week. But when I spoke about it with my sponsors and Papa, I felt completely supported. With that support, I used the men's restroom comfortably and was arranged to sleep with my family. I am so grateful to my sponsors for letting me share my wishes and critiques while I was staying at MDS. The whole week, my crew group, Leah, Jorn, and Papa, worked at one house. The work was exhausting, and we looked forward to the evenings every day. We managed the week by music, many breaks, each other, and a whole bunch of Gatorade. Now, if you would ask me if I'd be willing to go again, I would say, only if my friends are going.
I have one more quick one. The woman we were working for, Miss Linda, really should have probably gotten a new house. Her house was riddled with termites. But we'd put in a lot of work. We got a lot of things done. She was the person who hadn't had a toilet or running water in her house for 2 years. And as we're going along, she kept saying a little bit more that she liked done. She saw the beautiful things that were happening, and she wanted a little bit more. And there was some back and forth about, you know, can we do a little bit more? And as I was thinking about it, it really hit me what an amazing gift we can give to allow someone to have the power of saying, this is how I want my house to be. This is the place that I want to live. This is the space that I want. This is where I want my family. And it was really a lovely gift to be able to give that to her.
This is very interesting dynamic right now. I'm Glenn Hosteller, and I tagged along. And when they asked me if I'd want to share, it's like, of course, I have so much going on inside me. I'm sure I'll have so much to say. And while I'm standing here looking at you, or you're looking at me, I'm not sure where that all went. But so one of the things that that may have not been said that is worthy noting is that I have gained a deep respect for our youth sponsors. If you want to clap, that is fine. They were very intentional and invitational to the youth to participate whenever it came time to make a decision, whenever it came time to, you know, where to eat, what, you know, and trying to get us to the certain location at a certain time, they were able to do that. When it was time to rest, they had that arranged already. I literally was along for the ride. In fact, one time they asked me if there's 20 minutes ahead of us, let's plan on eating. And I knew that you can navigate through the GPS to see where this is at and where we could choose. And they wanted to invite the, you know, what's the meal going to be like? Is it going to be Mexican? Is it going to be Chinese? What fast food? You know, they wanted input. Well, once that was a vote, then where are we going to go? So I was asked to, if I could do the simple process of finding that. I couldn't even accomplish that. I just couldn't. I asked for help for that even. So anyway, I have great admiration for Darren and Eric and Amy and for their involvement in the youth in terms of in many aspects, respecting them for their wishes, their voice, giving them voices to what the individual and then as a group as well. The other thing I want to mention is that they as in the leadership down there, MDS, handed me the truck keys and said I will be leading a group of four of us to a project. And as you heard, we concentrated on that one house, trying to improve their ceiling with ceiling tile. And the group I had was so much fun to watch as they were intentional in their just learning to use the tool. And then at the end of the week, being able to just see their proud efforts of what they had accomplished. And then the interactions with each other and helping each other when they saw the need, the work together, the team that we had to work this week. I'm just so proud of each one and their contributions. That's all I have.
I'm sure there's more, but